Was reminded a little bit of a Seder kind of experience, whereas Rabbi Rice just mentioned a few minutes ago that we have all have a kiyum of the mitzvah of Igadta Levincha by definition. Baruch Hashem, for most of us, there are multiple generations, at least two, at our Siddurim. And for many of us, we're zocha to have even more generations at our Siddurim. As I watched current students, alumni, current parents, former parents walk into the room over the last few minutes, I had this little feeling of the generations of SKA gathering together for a night of Higadta Levincha in a very beautiful way. This night, of course, was organized and inspired a little over a year ago by Rabbi Rice, and it was really his wherewithal that pushed it forward. And I think got both Mrs. Feinberg and I out of our kitchens and homes on tonight. It was his persuasive ability. So we certainly thank Rabbi Rice and his wife as well, I would say, for that. As I just referred to, on Leil HaSeder, while tonight we may be hearing from people who are professional educators, on Leil HaSeder we are all educators. It is the night of the Igadta Levincha, where we have a mitzvah to teach and to transmit to our children important values, important ideas. And we are challenged on that night, even those of us who are professional educators, are challenged often by those who are around our table, by the diverse learners that are around our table, by the various different learning needs, styles, ages of the people around our table. And therefore, I think it's interesting to look at the Haggadah, I mentioned this last year as well, from the perspective of some of the educational methodology that is actually in the Haggadah itself. And if you think about it, when we talk about the Haggadah, it's actually structured as a teacher's guide. Modern educational philosophy tells us that effective teaching includes essential questions. We certainly have plenty of those in our Haggadah, as well as big ideas. What are big ideas? So Grant Wiggins, an educational theorist, tells us that an idea is big if it helps us make sense of lots of confusing experiences and seemingly isolated facts. So I remember when I first heard this concept, an ideal in education, what immediately struck me is sometimes the way we might approach teaching Chumash. We could teach a parak of Chumash, and we could teach a Rashi, a Kliyakar, a Rabban, an Eben Ezra, and we could teach a lot of information, and the students could walk out either from a particular class or at the end of a parak, and you could say, so tell me, what's parak Aleph about? And they don't really know. They know a Rashi, they know a Kliyakar, they know Pasuk Gimel, but they don't really have a sense of the overarching theme. And I'm not here at all to be critical of teaching lots of material or from teaching any one part, saying any one part is more important than the other. But what Grant Wiggins and other educational theorists told us, but of course what Chazal understood way before them, is that it's important to teach things with a big idea. He gave the mashal of a connect the dots page in a puzzle book before the lines are drawn, meaning each dot is that little itty-bitty piece, the Rashi, the Kliyakar, the Ramban. But who's going to come and draw the line through it all and say, it's a kite. That's what we have here. All those little pieces add up to a total whole, and we're walking out with a concept, with an idea. I happen to think that this idea actually happens year after year at many of our siddurim. Baruch Hashem, our children come, and they're full of Divrei Torah. They may be gematrias, they may be stories, and they have lots and lots of, if you'll excuse my terminology, itty-bitties. And everybody is coming with their own itty-bitty. And the question becomes, when we get to Shulchan Aruch, if you were to walk up to any of our children, or I'll venture to say to any of our adults and say, Nu, what did we talk about tonight? It would be hard for them to have the picture. It would be hard for them to have that central theme and central idea. So I'd like to just suggest something tonight that I suggested last year, but we're going to take it in a little bit of a different direction. And that is, while many of us, all of us, I imagine in this room, do not yet have the schus of celebrating Pesach in Eretz Yisrael on a regular basis as people who live in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore we're likely to be celebrating two nights of Pesach and have two siddurim, which can seem somewhat redundant and somewhat boring, I'd like to suggest that perhaps in my family, try to do this on the second night. Declare a big idea for the night. Say, tonight is the night in advance that we are all going to discuss a big idea, one concept. And last year I suggested that that concept be the concept of resilience. This year I'm going to suggest that perhaps that concept be the concept of Hakarat HaTov. And when I suggest that, I say the following. The night before, or before Pesach even, tell everybody, if, and trust me, they do, the idea is so big that there is no way your children with their loose leaves and notebooks are not coming to the Seder table with a Dvar Torah, if not more, or a story, or even to recognize a song that we sing during the Seder itself that relates to Hakaras HaTov. Please don't share it on the first night. Save that for the second night. And imagine how beautiful it is when that night resonates. And again, you don't have to be so strict. I don't think we have to say, no, it's not about Hakaras HaTov, don't say it. But imagine if that night resonates with thoughts and ideas of Hakarat HaTov throughout the evening. There's no way when we get to Shulchan Orach that if you were to ask your children, what was tonight about? What was the theme of this evening? Thank you so much. They won't understand that the theme was a theme of Hakarat HaTov. And just to think about this, when Grant Wiggins talks about what a big idea is, he says that a big idea qualifies as a big idea when it can be applied to more than one discipline. It's a concept that can withstand the test of time. Students can apply the big idea to their lives. It promotes in-depth understanding. It's a concise statement, principle, theory, or generalization. And lastly, it helps you make sense of things. So to me, and I could give definitely other examples, Mirtz Hashem next year, perhaps I'll suggest a third example, I believe that the concept of Hakarat HaTov is one which certainly fits that definition. So I'm going to spend the next 20 minutes or so highlighting areas in the Haggadah where you can contribute to the theme of Hakarat HaTov, the big idea of Hakarat HaTov for the evening, if that's the path that you choose to take. The sources in front of you came primarily from three Haggadot. I always like to highlight Haggadot that I personally enjoy and find interesting and accessible to my family. The first is the Exalted Evening, Haggadah of the Torah of the Rav. The second is the Night That Unites, a more recent Haggadah that came out. Rabbi Aaron Goldschneider put it together. It's a beautiful compilation of Divrei Torah from Rav Shlomo Karlbach, from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and from Rav Kook. Fascinating how they unite on the night that unites in a very beautiful way with beautiful themes. And the third, and each of them are indicated in each of the sources, is a beautiful Haggadah called the Family Haggadah from Rabbi Yosef Rimon from the Halachic Institute in the Gush. Fabulous Haggadah in terms of interactive ideas for your children and places for reflection. So the first source on the front actually comes from the Night That Unites. And if you see here, we have the text of Shirat Hayam, the song that Bnei Yisrael sang in Parshat B'Shalach upon coming out of the Yam Suf. And he quotes that Rav Soloveitchik noted that when we give thanks to the Ribbono Shel Olam, when we talk about Hakarat HaTov to Hashem, we do so in song. But he notes the following interesting phenomenon, that if you look at the actual text as it appears in a klaf, that when we get to the Shirat Hayam, it is set up differently. There are spaces between the text. And the Rav suggests that at times we find that there are no words that can possibly capture and express the emotion that we're feeling in our hearts. He explains that the reason why there are spaces is because sometimes you can't utter something in words. You're so overflowing with emotion, with thanks to the Ribbono Shel Olam, that words do not suffice. And we say that. I thank you more than words can express is something that we say to people in times when we're in that place. And he writes, the empty spaces represent a song without words. Frankly, it reminded me of a power of a niggun. When we sing a niggun that doesn't have words, but it uplifts us in a way, it affects us in a way that doesn't require words and maybe even supersedes words in and of itself. There are times that we experience moments of such emotional exhilaration and intensity that we're at a loss for words. This is what Bnei Yisrael felt when they came out of the Yam Suf. When I read this, I was actually reminded of a Rashi at the beginning of this past week's Parsha, Vayikra Perek Aleph, Pasuk Aleph. And there, Rashi actually comments on the spaces that we find in the Torah, more regularly, not just with a shira, but whenever parshiot end. Sometimes they're shorter spaces, sometimes they're longer spaces. And there Rashi says that the reason for the spaces were litein lemoshe, revach lehit bonen. That sometimes we need space to reflect. Sometimes we need space just to think. And if you think about Hakarat HaTov, Hakarat HaTov cannot come without reflection. When people are in autopilot, when people are used to things being there for them, dinner on the table, the bus driver coming to the bus stop at the right time, the supermarket being open because they say they're opening at 7 o'clock, watch people at Costco, right? At 10:01, right? Okay, like where are they? They're supposed to be there, but we don't stop to reflect about all of the things that go to make our lives work the way that they need to work, we can't possibly give thanks. I'd like to suggest that if Shirat Hayam is the expression of Bnei Yisrael's Hakarat HaTov, that perhaps, based on the Rashi in this past week's Parsha, that the spaces are there as well to remind us that Hakarat HaTov is founded upon reflection. That if we don't give time and spaces for reflection, then we will not be able to have an effective means of expressing Hakarat HaTov to others in that particular way. So as you turn the page, you'll note that what I've done is, for each idea throughout the Haggadah, throughout Maggid, I stuck to Maggid, for each idea throughout the Maggid, I created questions for reflection. Because I believe that just highlighting concepts, ideas, Divrei Torah, are beautiful. We need that yedda. We need that knowledge. But that knowledge is meaningless and will not contribute to the big idea, the takeaway message, if we don't allow times for reflection. Now, full disclosure, I created this about a week and a half ago. I've looked at it 3 or 4 times since, and each time I'm like, that's not a good question. I have a better one now. And that's just because that's the moment that I'm in. It's not because it's really a better question. These are just things which came to me. Depending on the ages of your children, I tried to vary them a little bit. You're going to need to vary them and create them as meaningful questions for reflection, either for yourself or for the people at the table. So let's begin. The Rav tells us, makes a very interesting comment in general about the concept of the mitzvah of Tzipor Yetzias Mitzrayim. He tells us that the duty of remembering does not impose on a person obligation to recite prose and thanks. We have many other things that we're supposed to remember. There are many other zechers. There's this Chiras Amalek. We just read Parsha Zachar about 4 weeks ago, right? We have a responsibility to remember Masha Asa Amalek. We have a responsibility to remember what happened to Miriam in the Midbar. But we don't have a corollary obligation to thank in those situations. The Rav suggests, and this is a huge idea, this is why Hakaras HaTov is part and parcel of the evening. It's not separable in any ways. That the mitzvah to tell the story obligates one not only to relate to the wonders and miracles that God did for us, but also to praise and thank Him. So that made me wonder a little bit and ask the question, if the difference, one of the differences that we see is it's not just a mitzvah to remember, but it's actually a mitzvah to tell the story. It's a long story, and we spend a long time telling the long story. What is it about storytelling that helps us be more genuinely thankful? And that was a question that I actually stopped to think about. Fortunately, due to time constraints and the tremendous Divrei Torah that you'll hear from my colleagues, I don't want to take up too much. I'm not going to do this. The most effective way would be to suggest that you reflect now. So you'll excuse me for filling in your spaces. I'll give a suggestion of my reflection, but of course, hope that you'll take the opportunity to reflect on your own at a different time. I really thought about this a little bit, and I said to myself, it's so interesting. Whenever my children ask me, tell me the story of when I was born, and you start back from the night before or the morning of, and you go through every detail, we made eggs, and then we, whatever the story, what happens in that story? What's going on? You become so engrossed in the story, and that's why your kids love it, by the way, okay? Because you're remembering every prat. I connect. Remember, those are the days where they weren't cell phones, and Abba was wearing a beeper, and then I had to beep him, and then the beeper went off in shear, and he didn't even hear it, but the boys heard it. And they said, Rebbe, your wife's pregnant, right? Whatever was going on. And the whole story that was taking place, that was happening, and I have greater Hakarat HaTov because of the details of the story. The details give me a sense of Hakara HaTov. So it's not just remember Yitzias Mitzrayim, but let's go through the details. It's a Dayenu kind of aspect, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. Every prat to prat that happened, this is what we have Hakarat HaTov for. To point that out to our children, to point that out to adults, that it's important for us to tell the stories of our lives. With Hashem's help, Ezrat Hashem, they should be stories of beautiful simchas and brachos that happen in our lives. But to recognize prat uprat of how the Ribono Shel Olam is involved in our life along the way. We open up the Magid with a very strange paragraph. The paragraph of Halach Ma'anya. We remember the bread of affliction, and then we start inviting people into our homes. These are very popular questions. There are many, many answers. Rabbi Yosef Ramon in his family Haggadah asks, what are we doing here? What's the connection between remembering the bread of affliction and inviting people into our home? And he teaches us something else about Hakarat HaTov. That it's important to remember the past, sometimes in order to contrast it to the present. He writes, it's normal for someone who has difficulties to feel that if he could only fill a certain void in his life, he would take great pains to ensure that no one else would suffer as he suffers now. If only he had money, he'd be sure to supply the needs of others. If only he were married, he and his friends would help his single friends. And we do this all the time. We feel our pain and we make a little nedja to ourselves. When this is over, I'm sure I will, because of that pain and that filling of that void, I will do A, B, and C. But of course, what happens to many of us in life? Once that pain is behind us, once HaKadosh Baruch Hu has sent the refuah and the yeshua, he should send to everybody who needs, once that happens, we sometimes forget completely whether it was an actual nedar or it was just putting yourself in an empathetic way in somebody else's shoes. It's far and away from us. Rabbi Ramon suggests that in the paragraph of Halach Ma'anya, we're giving ourselves a methodology to constantly recognize that which we have. Go back. Remember that which you didn't have at some point. Recognize now that you do have it, but take it one step further. Fulfill that neder to share it with others. There was a time where you were eating the lechem oni, and there was a time where you had nothing. You're now sitting at a table of plenty. Make sure that you don't forget those times of pain and suffering. Be thankful for everything that you have. And one of the ways that we're able to be thankful is through the contrast of a time in the past that we did not have. But then take action, because it will disappear. You will forget that pain and actively engage in giving to others. Question for reflection. Can you think of a time that you were so grateful for something that you thought you would remember it forever, and then you forgot? I believe it's a sophisticated question, but I believe it could be asked to a young child. Do you remember when you were missing that last red Lego that was supposed to complete the roof, and you couldn't find it, and you were so upset, and the whole family helped you, and then we found it? What can you do to preserve that feeling of Hakarat HaTov for having found it? One of the ways, right, is to share with others, to share either in their looking, to share in their pain, to share your plenty with somebody who needs that last Lego piece, and you have another one to share at that time. When we get to the section of the Haggadah of the Arba Banim are often discussed as four different ideologies, times in history, types of people. The Svas Emes, as quoted by Rabbi Ramon, suggests something fascinating. The Svas Emes says that within each and every one of us are four elements of the four sons. Four, we are all of them. Because after all, these are questions within each and every Jew. True, sometimes we ask really smart questions. Sometimes we have some really mean questions. You think that looks good? Why would you do that, right? Now, hopefully we're PC enough maybe not to articulate that, but I have to imagine that most of us recognize that those Russia-like questions, those mean questions, can run through our heads sometimes, and that can be a part of who we are. Sometimes there are unintelligent questions that we ask, right? And we sometimes, hopefully, have people who support us and don't make us feel bad, But sometimes we felt like the laughing. Oh, I just said that 2 minutes ago. What were you doing? Texting, right? Where were you, right? But those are the unintelligent questions that we ask because we aren't fully present. And then, of course, sometimes they're the questions that we should be asking that we don't even think to ask. How are you feeling? How can I help you? You look like something's bothering you, right? And we're totally oblivious to what's going on around us. We're in our own Dalet Amos, She'ena Yodea Lishol. We're not even aware of what to ask. Sfas Emes suggests that these four questions are actually four questions that lie within each and every one of us. And I'd like to suggest that that recognition is actually something that could help us with Hakaras HaTov. How? Well, if you think about it, there's no term in Lashon HaKodesh or in modern-day Hebrew of Hakarat Hara. Guess what? We're pretty good at it, right? We don't need somebody to actively tell us, engage in being Makir Tov. And I want to clarify something which I probably should have clarified at the beginning. We do a terrible mistranslation of Hakarat HaTov. We translate it as saying thank you. That's to be modeh, to give todah. Hakarat HaTov literally means to recognize the good. So recognizing the bad, we don't need a mandate for. We're pretty good at it. We can be critical of anybody, any situation, anticipate bad things, etc. But a Hakarat HaTov is something that we have to actively engage in. I'd like to suggest that when it comes to our interpersonal relationships and seeing the good, bein adam lechavero, seeing the good in other people, we need to recognize that some of those bad recognitions that come so naturally to us are actually things that are within us as well. That when somebody asks an unintelligent question, been there, done that. When somebody says something that's a little bit off and isn't so nice and isn't so polished, been there, done that, certainly in my own mind. And therefore, when I recognize that the four sons lie in each and every person, including ourselves, it gives space and allows for me to recognize the good in other people who might be rubbing me the wrong way. They think they're such a smart aleck. They're always saying the smart things, etc., etc. And that, I believe, is the answer to the reflection question of how does the Sfas Emes explanation help us appreciate other people. When we get to the section of the Haggadah, Tzei Ulmad, Ma Bikesh Lavan, and goes on to tell us, we recite the text of the Bikurim that was brought when Bnei Yisrael brought the Bikurim. Again, famous questions are asked here. Why are we going back to Lavan? Since when is he an arch enemy of the Jewish people? And what does Bikurim have to do with anything? And once again, Rav Yosef Ramon, just very simply, we go all the way back in history because one thanks HaKadosh Baruch Hu by examining the course of history of Am Yisrael. This way we understand there's a divine plan that leads our nation, as Rabbi Rice referred to, the Seder, from the beginning of our forefathers to the present day. Our thanks are not only for Yitzias Mitzrayim, but Yitzias Mitzrayim is an example of how Hashem has helped Bnei Yisrael over the generations, and we thank him on the Seder night for all of his help. I chose to print here because I happen to think it's something that people quote all the time and don't often see inside. I'm not going to go through it right now, but a very famous Ramban at the end of Parshas Bo. It is so stunning. Again, if people at your Seder have the attention for it, it is kedai to read. It's an amazing, amazing piece where the Ramban says something very, very similar, or I should say Rabbi Ramon says something similar to the Ramban. Where when we talk about Tzipor Yitzias Mitzrayim, we're not just talking about the one act that the Rabbonu Sholem did, but the Nisim Gluyim, the major, major Nisim that the HaKadosh Baruch Hu performed, like Kriyas Yamsuf, are there only in order to draw attention to the Nisim Nistarim Shehem Yisod HaTorah Kula, to recognize that the Rabbonu Sha'olam is part of our lives constantly. So the Haggadah, so to say, would be incomplete if we just focused on Yitzias Mitzrayim. But we go way back in history to something seemingly incidental, an incidental character, Lavan. If I were to ask somebody to name the top 10 people in Sefer Bereishis, I suspect Lavan wouldn't get to the top 10 list, right? He's an incidental character in that way. But nothing's incidental. HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts people and circumstances into our lives in order to benefit us. And our job, and that's why there's so many mitzvot that are Zeichel Yitzias Mitzrayim, is to recognize the Rabbonu Sha'olam in our lives. Hakarat HaTov, to recognize the good that Rabbeinu Sha'olam does for us. It's not just Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, as we discussed a few minutes ago with Arba Banim, but it's Bein Adam L'Makom as well, and to recognize Hashem's presence in our life. Can you think of a time when you recognize Hashkachat Hashem? What can help you see Hashem's hand more often? One could suggest this could be a big idea in and of itself, Hashkachat Hashem, but it certainly goes in tandem with Hakarat HaTov. HaTov, I would say, with a capital Tet. The Tov, the source of all good in the world, and recognizing the Ribbono Shel Olam in our lives in that particular way. I'll conclude with the obvious place that Hakarat HaTov manifests itself, the ultimate song of Hakarat HaTov, and that is the Dayenu piece. And of course, the famous question that surrounds Dayenu, where there'll be many, many answers to, but I'd like to suggest just a few short ideas here, is what's going on? You're giving me like a half-baked story. You could bring us to the edge of the sea, but not have us cross it. What good would that actually have done for us, the Ribbono Shel Olam? And here Rabbi Rimon suggests something so powerful. I'm going to read it in his words. This piyut comes to teach us that every step is important. Every stage in the process of redemption of the Jewish people is significant. Clearly, in the end, we needed the next stage as well. But from this, we can learn an important message to future generations. We do not always understand what we are going through. Sometimes we see open miracles, but along with them are problems. I'm sorry to interject here. I can't help but feel Rabbi Rimon, who is a staunch religious Zionist, a leading Rav in the Dati Leumi community, is not talking about some of our struggles that we live with today in our beloved gift of Medina Yisrael. Listen to what he says. Sometimes we find ourselves in a condition of uncertainty. We must always remember that each stage in our redemption is of importance, even if right now we are in the middle of the process and we cannot understand how redemption will come from that miracle. Of course, he could also be talking about individual questions and issues that we suffer with and struggle with in our own lives. It's not only the final result. The redemption of Yisrael is important. The process, too, is significant. And not only because it leads to our goal. The process is meaningful in itself in building the faith of Israel and transforming us into a nation. What a powerful message for any generation. If you ask my humble opinion, a vital message for the children of the 21st century, where everything is about end results, where process takes relatively little effort for anything, and the notion that there's value in process is something that is an imperative notion to give over to our children. We should have Hakarat HaTov for the experience, even if it didn't end the way that we wanted it to end. We should have Hakarat HaTov for the chance to be on the team, even if we didn't win the championship. There's value to those experiences. Can you think of a time that you recognized value in process? You built the building and your brother came and knocked it down. You're devastated. Of course we'd want to cross the sea to get the Torah at Har Sinai. But was there value? Did you have fun building the building? Was that something that you're able to recognize at that particular time? I'll let you read the piece from Rabbi Sachs on your own. It's pretty self-evident. Chas v'shalom, I'm not in any way relegating it as unimportant or uninspiring. If it made it here, it's something that I certainly felt that way too, but I just don't want to take too much time. It's here where he talks about the fact that only people who are free can give gratitude. Now that's an interesting question. Why would that be? Why would it be that only people who are free can actually be in a place to give Hakarat HaTov as opposed to Avadim? So I'd like to suggest that an Eved is completely dependent on its master and actually resents his master horribly. His dependency on his master is full of resentment. All that he wants is to break loose from his master. But when we went from being Avde Paro to Avde Hashem, it's a very different type of dependency. We are dependent on our master, capital M, but that is a dependency which we thrive on, which we love, and therefore, only once you're in that kind of a relationship can you possibly find yourself in a position to be somebody who is able to be Makir Tov. The last piece here is something which many of our students have actually seen, something which I've shared with them, relates to the multiple steps of Dayenu. It's actually a piece that appears in Rabbi Zelig Pliskin's Gateway to Happiness. I took it offline from H.com here. But it's something which talks about when we say thank you, which we hope we train our children to. They go into a Starbucks, they get their coffee from the barista, and they say thank you. Who are they thanking? What are all the multiple steps that go into that cup of coffee? Back to the farmer who planted the bean, to the person who created the styrofoam cup, to the brilliant person who created the stopper to keep the steam in, right? And to everybody else along in the process. What a gorgeous question to just think about something that you're thankful for. Your phone, your room, your bed, whatever it might be. And to just spend time listing all of the people you would have to thank for that object. The people who created it, the people who made the money to be able to buy it, the people who actually went to buy it. To create that sense of Hakarat HaTov in a detailed way is exactly what Dayenu does. The section of Magid, of course, concludes with Hallel. And we're told, Lefichach anu chayavim lahodos ulahalel. We must say thank you to the Rabbonu Sha'olam. And that is the main part of the Seder night. I didn't make up that it's a big idea. The Haggadah tells us that it's a big idea. We must internalize the concept of enslavement and redemption are not only part of our history, but a real ongoing internal conflict. We too must liberate ourselves from our own external enslavements. Great question for reflection. What are we enslaved to? Be they cultural, psychological, or physical. When we work on ourselves and achieve true inner freedom, we are inspired to offer thanks to Hashem for the daily miracles. Only after Magid, only after telling the whole story of Tzipor Yetzias Mitzrayim, when we're free, we recognize all those stages, we're satisfied not to be enslaved to anybody other than the Rabbonu Sha'olam, that's when we're able to recognize the incredible Hashkachat Hashem and see the Hakarat HaTov, as I said before, with a capital Tet. Magid and Haggadah gives us an opportunity to reflect, to offer Hakaras HaTov, to our families who you're surrounded by, Be'ezrat Hashem at the Seder, to our greater communities, and of course, ultimately, to the Ribbono Shel Olam.